Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 812. And this is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, got to enjoy the Merry Christmas holiday because that is my holiday of choice. And yeah, had a good time with the family. Had some good times with some friends, even if I found out that one of them was a Reiki. So that was an interesting revelation. Not surprised due to them being my friends, but still somewhat surprised nonetheless. So, fun weekend had. So there was a merry indeed Christmas to be had in the DeFrango household. And, you know, did not watch a whole lot of wrestling. How about you? Did you watch a lot of wrestling over this merry holiday weekend?
No. I completely skipped SmackDown. Knew it was a tape show. Read the spoilers. Didn't sound all up. Particularly interesting. From there, I've already quit watching Rampage a while ago, unless they announce something that's a really really big deal. And then of course Raw was a best of show, and other than the new interview with Cody Rhodes, I did not sneak a peek at any of that.
Yeah, this would have been an easy show to YouTube and review. And I guess since you specifically brought up his name, I would argue that Cody Rhodes' biggest story in wrestling this year, if we're going to do our own best of type of situation here, because he affected both companies. Would be my argument for him being the number one story in professional wrestling. What do you think?
The way you put it, yes, it caused a ripple effect of a lot of different things. But I mean, at the end of the day, Vince McMahon having to go off into the sunset. Some will say temporarily, some will say permanently. But that time will tell. I don't think anything could be a bigger story than that. I made a point earlier this week on Twitter, and it's really sticking out to me that despite WWE losing their alpha A number one presence for over 40 years over the course of a 6 week period of controversy, in the aftermath, they rode that wave as smoothly as you could have possibly ridden it. The transition to Triple H in power, whether you want to say their improvements were made or not, or if it's still a lot of the same, regardless, as a company, they are still moving as smoothly as ever. And it's really amazing. Meanwhile, the loss of Cody Rhodes, combined with the arrival of CM Punk and the vacuum of power all of this created, led to complete upheaval in AEW. Their TV ratings, I believe, have consistently fallen under 1 million viewers over the course of the last 6 months. You know, if they hit that million, they're happy. When before they were getting 1.1s and 1.2s, on occasion. Money-wise, obviously, wrestling is, to this day and age, is so dependent on TV money, so that's steady. But there's so much. Now, this has nothing to do with, CM Punk and Cody Rhodes or anything of the sort, or maybe it does a little bit. AEW's future essentially rides on what happens with the Warner Brothers Discovery situation, which is a whole real-world thing that, it is well beyond wrestling. The story of that company and the shovel nature of it, and it pretty much determines whether or not AEW exists or not. If
Which that's one of those ones where that story has been around for what, most of this year.
Yes. I mean, we hear rumors that the new overlords are happy with AW's performance, but then we hear things like, okay, ROH is going to be on the Honor Club streaming service when they begin weekly TV. So they could not, they did not get a weekly TV time slot for an ROH show on a Warner Brothers Discovery station. There's still no sign of an HBO Max deal that would get an exclusive show like an ROH show on there, as well as, you know, the full archive of Dynamite, Rampage, the pay-per-views of every show AEW has ever done, the ROH, you know, the ROH library is essentially going to be property of Honor Club, which our friend of the show, Steve Williams, took a tour through Honor Club recently, and let me tell you, they have not fixed that thing up at all. It is a very, and I, without purchasing it, did download the app to my Roku and just explore it, and it's a very cheap looking app. Like, they have not really, they still need to do a lot of work. If they really want to make that a thing where it's the only place you can watch the ROH library, let alone a weekly TV show in 2023, they're going to have to fix that thing, because it is buggy. It looks like something out of an app that was made maybe 10 years ago or of some sort when these streaming devices were first coming out. It's pretty bad. It is not something that looks like the product of a multi-million dollar company. And of course, I'm bringing all this up as saying that I'm not seeing it in. I'm not seeing Warner Brothers Discovery's commitment to AEW and Tony Khan in their actions. Maybe they're getting smoke blown off their ass, but I'm not seeing it in their actions toward them of investing more money into this. Which, of course, also leads to that, you know, they can't get these ratings back up, and there has been permanent damage done to AEW's, you know, reputation. Again, Cody leaving was such a... He was the mediator. You can tell. He was the steady hand in that company.
Oh.
And he's not there anymore.
Well, and I guess that was interesting because I feel like someone did ask Cody Tony Khan about that recently. And, you know, he admitted to how it threw plans off for months. You know, like, he didn't cite, obviously, smartly, he didn't name anything specifically. But, you know, yeah, there, things markedly changed after that, after Cody Rhodes left. And it's... Yeah,
there was a power, the absolute power vacuum opened up, and we could see that Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks aren't good politicians. They're not particularly, nor are they really particularly strong with creative. That had already been kind of said about them, but...
Oh.
They made it pretty obvious that they were not fans of CM Punk, and that would eventually come to a head. CM Punk, on the other hand, you know, his vaunted reputation preceded him, and he absolutely lived up to it. And these two forces met head on, with neither of them having a bone in their body that told them to stop, that told them that they should that it's time to cool off. Maybe we, you know, for the good of the company, we need to work
together.
Here.
Yeah,
essentially. I mean, Punk said it that, you know, I'm old, I'm tired, I work with fucking children. Well, he was also behaving like a child. He obviously also behaved like a child as well. And the effect of all of this, I mean, first you have Cody being gone. The intrusion of ROH and ROH store, ROH
no.
wrestlers and title belts onto AEW TV threw everything off. Like, once again, I could not imagine being a new viewer trying to understand why it seems like everyone has a belt on this show.
Yeah, that was one of those things that I definitely had on my list of stories of the year. Like, I couldn't imagine. Like, I mean, I made fun of it, but they had Battle of the Belts on a Friday, and then they had Championship Tuesday, what,
Yes.
4 days later? And it's just like it, and it's just like every match is for a championship, huh? Like,
Across like three different shows, because I believe there were probably all, they also just one or two title matches on Rampage the previous Friday as well. It was an insane thing. It just, and AEW added three of their own championships in 2022. They added the Trios Championship, which serves no purpose to me. This All Atlantic Championship that is now basically a toy, that a literal toy that Orange Cassidy keeps in a bag, and a second Women's Championship, which may have been the only one that actually worked as a center, as something to make Jade Cargill a centerpiece. That's worked, but the other two titles that they added. And then the moonlighting of the IWGP Tag Team Championships, the AAA Tag Team Championships. AAA has a mixed tag team championship that has been defended on AEW TV, for fuck's sake. Why? We did not need Sammy Guevara and Tay Mello mixed tags for titles. It's just, it's mind-boggling. And once again, and at the same time, CM Punk went down with the initial foot injury, was the build to Forbidden Door, which, as something that was sold to a niche audience of hardcores, apparently did pretty well, but it tanked the AEW rating, and it hasn't recovered. TV ratings, and hasn't really recovered. Who are these people? Why are they on my show? Why are they on this show? It was like being, we're only in season three, but it was like if you're watching a show, a long-running show, and then season five, they decided that well, to change things up, we're adding a bunch of new characters. But then they act like these new characters have been there the whole time, where you're supposed to know who they are. They're, hey, it's Cousin Jim. Hey.
I don't know who
Cousin
Cousin
Jim.
Jim is. Fill me in,
No, it's like,
please.
yeah, it kind of, it really felt like that, and it continues to feel like that. I mean, basically, even though he's been de-pushed on AEW TV due to take your pick of backstage instances in AEW to talk about, but they bring these Japanese, every couple of months it seems like they're bringing it out of Japanese legends so they can throw Eddie Kingston a bone and get him to cry on TV. And it's just
Oh.
like, while not pushing him in any meaningful way otherwise, because they're mad at him because of the Sammy Guevara fight. And it's just like, once again, it's like, and the thing is, I'm in the niche of a niche. Like I do know who these people are,
Oh,
but
right.
at the same time, it still doesn't all fit together, and it's just. It has been, as I said, it's been fascinating that AEW has failed their big tests of, wrestlers going down to injury, of backstage politics and backstage arguments and fights, they drama they failed they failed they have failed their tests. Tony Khan has failed his tests. In year three, it feels like it's fallen apart. And it's still, well, go ahead.
Yeah, I it's one of those ones where if Khan learns from this, there's no reason they can't recover. And I mean, so that's gonna be the big thing here, I guess, is, and I feel like it was something that I talked about, and I at least gave him a little bit of credit for Who was it? Oh, he hired a new global VP of marketing or something like that, who had worked with the WWE for quite some time. Like, that helps him with one part of business. I still think that he needs someone to help him with the, you know, the wrestlers part of the business that isn't, you know, isn't the Young Bucks, isn't Kenny Omega, and obviously it's not going to be Cody Rhodes, who kept all of the hounds at bay. Like,
it shouldn't be Chris Jericho as long as he's still active. It shouldn't be Danielson as long as he's still active. It should be Moxley as long as he's still active. It should be he does.
Oh right, yeah. It's no one that is active is allowed on this list.
Yeah. It probably should have been Regal, but we saw how that went. Now, I guess, of the names that they have, I mean, maybe Arne Anderson would be the best option, especially since you essentially pulled him from TV, other than doing episodes of Dark with in his son's corner. His son, who is, you know, never going to be more than fodder, so it's not like, as soon as you put Arne Anderson in charge of something, Brock Anderson's going to be a world title contender. I'm pretty sure we've made the decision of it. A final decision has been made about that.
I mean, even Tony Khan has made that decision by not really featuring him.
Yeah, so, I mean, or someone comes along who you can put in that position, you know, go for it. Yes, he absolutely needs a talent coordinator, wrangler, you know, not someone who was a wrestler. Someone who maybe a little, who still has a little bit of physical intimidation left in them as well. You know, it's that kind of game.
Oh.
Because, you know what? An underrated part of why this transition in WWE has gone so smoothly, Triple H is a wrestling legend. And he's about 6'3", 6'4", and still in good shape, even for a guy who just had a freaking heart attack. Wrestlers don't feel like they can push him around. Even Vince was 77 years old, but still
and still jacked in the gills.
It's you know what? It's human psychology. It's those superficial things that in life that will never, you know, people wonder people will ever not stop being superficial about people's looks and things of that nature. No, and men's height is important. And Tony Khan is a very very small man.
Yeah,
especially in the wrestling, something like the wrestling business, which is still half sport, half an athletic locker room.
Yeah, he is definitely more the to make it easy, wrestling nerd type rather than wrestler type. Yeah. There can certainly be a look down upon with Tony Khan that might not necessarily pop up with any of the examples you cited already. I mean, even if you go with start talking about Stephanie McMahon, she probably towers over about 3/4 of the women's roster.
Oh, she absolutely does. It's actually quite funny, and I mean, even more than literal size, the ability to project yourself.
Oh.
And Tony doesn't have that because Tony wants to be everyone's buddy. That's the thing. He never let that part go, and it blew up in his face.
I think that there's ways to accomplish that he hasn't done. Like, you've got to be a little more proactive with your maneuvers, I guess. You know, I think you can be buddy-buddy, but, you always need some authority to be able to throw down. Because if you don't have some type of boundaries, it's really easy for things to get out of hand, and that's he needs to establish boundaries.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, he absolutely does. Yes. And once again, as you said, nothing is beyond fixing. I mean, it's year three. Oh. I think they've still got nearly 2 years left on the TV deal they have. There's a lot can happen. A lot, positive momentum can swing back at any time. You just hit on that right thing. Putting the title on MJF was a good move to close the year out.
Yeah, because that was definitely one of those. It definitely wasn't an underrated part of AEW's bad year, but as great a job as Jon Moxley did as interim champion, that his momentum hasn't really died at all. Like, he's done a good job. Well, he's done a fairly good job of weathering the storm.
He has, and he deserves all the credit in the world. The first, before Punk showed up, I think they did that. Moxley's reign was great. He was really, really great. Second, Moxley's biggest problem is he loves wrestling too much. It's a weird thing to say.
No,
he enjoys it too much. Like, he's in the ring with these Lee Moriarty's of the world. He's giving them 50-50 matches. He's having too good a matches with these people who are beneath him.
Yeah, that was another one where Jeremy and I recorded during Dynamite last week, and I did not watch that match until a much later time, and I'm just like, he beat Darius Martin maybe a little more quickly than he has some of these other guys, but yeah, like you said, like he just gives away entirely too much offense in almost every match.
And there's no plan. There's no plan to push these people beyond that. So it's just like it's giving it away for nothing. And he's again.
Yeah.
And he was wrestling in the second or third match on the show on episodes of Dynamite while he was champion. It was just a weird situation. Now MJF getting on the microphone and saying, I'm almost never going to defend this championship, and how he's bragging about how he only had 7 matches the entire year of 2022. You know what? You might as well go with it. You might as well go with that. You might as well go all the way in the other direction. Yes. Although it'll be interesting to see what they do with this whole Danielson thing, because it feels like they're rushing into a Danielson MJF situation, and the January 4th episode of AEW is in Seattle. So it's like putting Danielson in a big match in Washington is something they may very, very well do, and I wouldn't blame them for doing it, but it also feels like that should also be the pay-per-view match in March too. So
I am kind of interested to see what goes on there, just because, like you said, like I. If MJF loses it, like, Bryan Danielson's on the list of guys who could potentially take that championship from him.
Unless someone really... Go ahead.
There's just not a long list in AEW that I think will beat him. I don't think, as much as I like Adam Page and as much as he's been pushed over the years, I don't see him being the one who breaks the reign of MJF. Like, I feel like it's got to be someone who'd already been established before AEW.
Yeah, I think it would be Danielson. The two big matches you should do, and I'm curious to see if they do put MJF and Danielson on free TV anytime soon, because there's still such that large gap before Revolution in March. But the two biggest ones are Danielson and Omega.
No.
That you really should build to. Now a dark horse has kind of emerged, and that is Ricky Starks getting another title shot because he's built some momentum around himself. And technically, because he won that Battle Royal, I believe he has another title shot in his back pocket. Although I'm still confused as to what the link to all those stipulations were, but I think he does. I think so.
He definitely seemed like he was talking like he will be back in line at some point.
Yeah. Now, as the next homegrown AEW guy to be a champion, he's probably that guy. And he is somebody who, when his contract is up, WWE would be very interested in. Him and MJF are probably the two big ones. So keeping both, so keeping them both happy should be a very, should be, you know, a pretty high priority. And so once again, if you can get a decent length reign out of MJF, you know, 6 to 9 months.
Oh.
You know, have him beat some of those, and have him beat Danielson, maybe have him beat Omega, have him, you know, beat Moxley again if they want to go that route, Paige, you know, beat some of these former, you know, these former champions and some other people who've had who have strong reputations elsewhere and whatnot. And he loses it to another homegrown AEW guy, whether that's Starks, whether they put Wardlow and him back together again as opponents. That's another thing they could possibly do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to work with here, saying that he is not, going to be defending his championship often on TV. They do have the baby faces to do that. You know, you can give Darby Allin a title shot on an episode of Dynamite. You can give Jungle Boy a title shot at an episode of Dynamite. You know, you can give Kingston a title shot at an episode of Dynamite, just to, because I do like to have that title defended once a month on the show. But then it does fly in the face of MJF's, first promo as champion, where he says he's never going to defend the title on TV. Of course, after the match, he already had scheduled Ricky Starks. I have a feeling they're going to work around that. I think, because AEW does, especially since it's so long, once again, still so long until Revolution, we will likely see MJF defend the title once or twice in the interim. And as I said, that is why they needed a heel champion. Now, I made that point before.
Yes.
They don't have the rank and file heels to do that, to do their monthly title defenses with. And, Moxley was defending the title against babyfaces, basically. And once again,
Internet stars.
And these ambiguous situations. Just to have a heel as champion. Because we've had three pay-per-views in a row, the storyline going into the pay-per-view and the main event was like ambiguity over who the fans should cheer for, Punk and Page.
Yeah.
Punk Moxley, and then the whole MJF storyline, left it very ambiguous as to whether, MJF was going to turn full face or not afterward. So it's just like we haven't had a real strong babyface versus heel, storyline heading into a pay-per-view. Arguably since Hangman versus Omega.
Oh.
maybe you would argue Hangman versus Adam Cole, even though they really didn't have a lot of heat to that match. So the last time they had a base versus heel main event that had heat to it is now over a year ago. So yes, they needed a heel seals champ, so that they can, build up a baby face to beat him, and build up some heels so that the next babyface champion has some new challengers.
That's why I did think that it was kind of interesting to throw Danielson at him this early, because it's just kind of like, I guess I'm just sitting here going, this is too early for MJF to drop the championship. Like, I don't. But they have written the story this way.
Yeah, I mean, you could do a TV match early that has a controversial finish so that you can get it to a pay-per-view. I still wouldn't do that. I'm old school enough. I want to pay to watch a match. I prefer it to be for the first time I've seen it. Yes, you could do long feuds and you could have multiple series of matches, but I'd still like to think that, you know, like to have not seen these two lock up without the option for paying for it.
No.
I mean, if they want to do that, I'll gladly watch it for free. I mean, don't get me wrong, but you know, it just flies
yeah,
in
twist
the face of,
my arm.
It just flies in the face of the logic of a first time ever match being that like that should be on paper. But I don't know. Once again, who knows? You know, who knows what they got planned? I just saw it on the date that you know that they're running Seattle on the 4th, and it's just like. You know, it just seems pretty ideal for a TV situation to run Danielson in his home state for the title.
Yeah, that seems like some pretty no-brainer stuff to have going on there. I guess one other AEW story that I can't get around before moving off of them, and this is, though I am not a fan, really, I would have to say that the Scissor Me Daddy gimmick is way over, and it's kind of weird in my opinion, but it is something of a highlight for AEW this year. What say you?
It is the proof to the principle that the dumbest shit gets over in wrestling. It really is. It really does. Once again, I don't know if it's necessarily my thing either. You know what? Once again, but I'm also not 12 years old anymore, so you know. It's an attempt to do something, and, you know, anything to get them some attention, to get them to go viral. And I've seen no sign that this is working. I have a niece in sixth grade. I have a 12-year-old niece in sixth grade. The kids aren't saying "Scissor Me, Daddy" all through the playground. Again, this is not 1998. The ratings aren't reaching 7s and 7.0 and 8.0 and everyone isn't watching this, unfortunately. But it's an attempt to do something. The acclaimed, you know, good for them for getting over. It's sometimes it's still fun to see Billy Gunn involved in a hot act. But also, they're currently feuding with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. And it's just like, remember when we thought AEW was going to run, like, tag team title main events? the Young Bucks weren't going to let the tag team division become cannon fodder, right?
Yeah. And that has definitely been a little bit of a sub theme there over in AEW, that the trios titles took precedent for reasons, and has really mucked with the tag team division itself, because
this best of seven has just been, it's been a bad idea. I mean, it has, you know, when you're in matches 2, 3, 4, 5, and you know it can't end, what are you doing? When the elite won match 3 and they went into match 4. I know you thought, well, we wouldn't want that. We come back from 3-1. You have them win that third match. The fourth match means nothing. They're fighting for nothing then. It's not the series can't end, and then the fifth match essentially means nothing because it can't end at 5.
Oh well, no, it was 3-1.
No, oh no, that's right. It was 3-1 going heading into match 5. Yes, you were correct. I apologize. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. But still, it's wrestling. It's wrestling. You know what's going to 7.
Well, yeah, that's the part that is just kind of like, in some ways, I'm like, just break from tradition. In a lot of ways, like, don't make it a 3-1 comeback and have the Bucks and Omega win it. Like, it just seems so cheesy to me. Have it be a little more of a seesaw battle. You know, keep them up by one as long. You know, if you want some drama to it and think that the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega aren't going to do it because they are. You know, at least keep the suspense there and just keep Death Triangle, you know, a step ahead from Jump Street and then just go from there. You know, if they would have been up 3-2 or what? It would have been just 2-2. Yeah, whatever. Just have it be tied up early.
You know they're going to do the ladder match. You know they're going to do it. It's just, I still hope Death Triangle wins because it's just like, let's get Omega at least back in a singles competition. let's end this trio's BS once and for all. You know, I mean, I guess they're not going to get rid of the titles, but you know, just put it out. You know. Put it as a secondary thing. Put it as maybe we see it more often on Rampage than on Dynamite. Type of thing. Let's get Omega back into singles competition.
Yeah, that would be the biggest thing to help out the company as a whole. Because at this point, he looks like he's good to go. I'm not sure.
That's right. They have the match tomorrow because January 4th, Omega is going to be in the Tokyo Dome wrestling Ospreay.
Yeah. So,
and he's going to go all out. And he's going to go all out in that match. It may not be my favorite style of match, but they're going to go all out in it. So why is Kenny Omega's first big singles match in New Japan and not in and it was not in AEW? It doesn't make any sense.
It's because New Japan knows that he's a single star, and Kenny Omega doesn't even know that he's a single star. Evidently,
he just wants to have fun with his friends.
Him, but you know, it's kind of weird. To just like go, yeah, okay, great. I was best in the world for like 3 years. I'm out. It's a decision that can be made. It's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, is there anything else in AEW that pops out of your mind that that needs gone over?
No, I think we've hit AEW really, really well here. I didn't even realize how much time has time had passed.
Outside of one Roman Reigns, would you say that Sami Zayn has had the best year in the WWE? Number two man on the list.
Without a doubt. This has been the year of Sami Zayn. From the feud with Johnny Knoxville to the... There was a little bit of a weird... transition. He wasn't, you know, but then that's when they were sniffing around the whole thing of him, you know, kissing Roman Reigns' ass and glomming himself to Roman Reigns. And yeah, we want to take it started in the spring. This has been going on for a while. He started actually letting him tag along, and then all the stuff with the Usos and Jay not wanting him around started, you know, later in the summer, and it was just it just really snowballed from there. It was, yeah, what a year. I mean, what can you say? I mean, just an incredible year for someone who really deserves it and has, you know, and and steps up to the plate and proves that he deserves it each and every week. Sometimes multiple times a week, because they'll put Sammy and the Usos and Solo on Raw most weeks as well. So it's like he has become an absolute force. He is just. He is the centerpiece of the main storyline in WWE.
He was one of a handful of people that made. He didn't get interviewed by Corey Graves, and I can't remember who the other co-host was, because I didn't recognize her at all. He didn't get interviewed by them, but he also had live-ish skits on his own. Like, that was one of the few kind of original shot material for Raw this week. Like, that's how much of a, impact he is on the product. Of course we wouldn't, it makes sense not to actually have Roman Reigns do anything for the show. Gotta have surrogates like Sami Zayn doing the grunt work all the time. So it gives us more Sami Zayn, and who's to argue with that? Not me at all. That man, he has been around wrestling for quite some time, and like you said, from Johnny Knoxville to all this bloodline stuff. The man has really been in the thick of it within the WWE for pretty much the entire year. God bless Sammy, and I hope this keeps on going at least a little bit longer for him. On my list here, Sami Zayn's partner in crime, Kevin Owens, not too far down that best year list. When you get to have a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin, I think you've had a pretty good year.
Yeah, what an incredible year! Yes, yeah, what a moment for him to have. It really was a beautiful situation. Being put in that position, being trusted in that position. I'm sure it meant the world to him. He was definitely if he wasn't already made in the eyes of Vince, Triple H, or whoever else was going to ever end up in charge of this company, he did that. And hats off to him. What a he probably could have retired happy right then and there, but then he was able to have a hell of a year. I mean, once again, still continuing as a heel afterward. Little weird, the whole, once again, putting the comedy situation with Ezekiel and once again, put him in any place in the card, he'll deliver for you.
No.
And then as the year started coming to a close, he's able to turn back face. He was became a pretty consistent foil for the Bloodline as we rounded out to towards the end of the year. We've had and they set it up throughout the whole Sami Zayn run of them bumping into each other backstage, or Sami Zayn being a guest on the Kevin Owens show, and things of that nature. To what we have right now, I mean, their incredible history has just in WWE now, if you include NXT, is we're at about 8 years. Of them, interacting with each other fairly regularly on WWE TV, whether they were proponents or partners. It felt like they were being moved away from each other somewhat permanently in the last year or so, year or two maybe. No. But boy, did that they come back with a vengeance. And now, once again, it is the centerpiece of WWE television. We don't know how this is all gonna turn out. I mean, they're on opposite sides right now, but we've seen indications that Sami Zayn does not, still does not, and this has, you know, loyalty and affection for the guy, so, which of course Roman Reigns wants to beat out of Sami Zayn, and by way of making him beat it out of Kevin Owens, you know, and that, you know, Kevin Owens, despite everything he's ever done to Sami Zayn, this is hilarious, and they do bring it up all the times. Kevin Owens is turned against Sami. He has no right to be upset, and they'll say that Kevin Owens really has no right to be upset about any of this.
Yeah, they have been pretty transparent about it, but the way I really like the way Kevin Owens' disapproval of this decision by Sami Zayn is like, he keeps on saying, he's like, I get it, but this is like really like, I got you. I did some low stuff, but this is really sinking even lower.
He doesn't want to see him be taken advantage of, and that's what he sees. That, you know, he knows that Roman Reigns will never fully accept him. He barely fully accepts his own family. It's just going to be a game of, you know, as I mentioned it last week. You know, what have you done for me lately? You know, each and every day, having to do something new to prove his loyalty and stick around for one more day. And Kevin Owens sees that. He doesn't want Sam that form. You know, there's so many layers to this. It's absolutely terrific. And once again, and this week coming up, and the last WWE television episode of the year, you know, another major piece of the another major chapter in that story is going to be told. We're going to keep having different chapters of that story being told all the way through WrestleMania. It is the best stuff the movie's done in years. And, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, two guys who a lot of people a decade or so ago would say would never even get a whiff of a tryout with WWE, let alone be in main events or major matches at WrestleMania, you know, centerpiece storylines with the world champion and title matches and all that. And, you know, here they are. It's an incredible story, and it's been a joy. I mean, they're both their runs up to this point have consistently been a joy, but this last year has really been the culmination of all of it, and to see it truly climax at WrestleMania in whatever fashion it will, it's really going to be amazing. And I'm glad to go on for this ride. I know Stunt Granny. We have a history of snark, but there's nothing to be snarky about this. This is just great storytelling and great wrestling. And
it really plays off of the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens history. You know, even if it is contradictory as we've noted here, it's really been one of the best parts of WWE TV, you know, this year. Like, just tying all of this stuff together with people who, I mean, I might not have believed, honestly. Like, as much as I like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Ring of Honor, at least the tail ends of their careers there, you know, I never would have thought that they would have gone this far this quick. And, you know, it's another one where, you know, they all did this for the most part under the watch of Vince McMahon. I mean, I know that these latest revelations are under Triple H, but these are two guys that, you know, we'd kind of let it slide if Triple H let these people flourish, just because we know he doesn't have the body type stigma that Vince McMahon is known for, / definitely for the most part preached by execution of his own product. You know, So I think that's an amazing part of this whole situation too, is that these storylines, like you said, Sami Zayn dates back to the spring. Like Vince was still around then when these seeds started to go. And I mean, and again, like they were playing off of, they've done a good job of playing off of Roman Reigns' own history with his family, just within the storyline too, with Jey Uso being the insubordinate one and not Jimmy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You
Oh
know?
God, yes, everything, all of this, yes.
So, yeah, they've done a good job. Like everyone has done a good job of playing off the history, including the aforementioned VKM. Another big story to me, I guess, in the WWE this year, honestly, markedly more positive on this brand. Bianca Belair, I think, officially got the stamp of main eventer with this year's. I know that she won at last year's WrestleMania, which is nothing to scoff at. But I feel like this year was something else. Like that was really, they hadn't cemented anyone other than the four horsewomen as main eventers. And this was the first step in someone else taking that mantle.
No, you're correct. It really was. They really built around her this year. I mean, the feud with Becky, so many people, the one time let it play out actually played out. People
Oh.
thinking that she was dead in the water after SummerSlam 2021, but they stayed the course. Bianca, worked her way back to title contention. She had an incredible match with Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. Then, moving on to, you know what, maybe the early portion of her title reign, maybe not the most ex sometimes not maybe not the most exciting.
Oh.
They threw a triple threat match in there. Situations dictated a Carmella title match that wasn't any great shakes. But then from SummerSlam on, that is when things really turned up.
Oh.
That, wrestling Becky again in another excellent match. Then the arrival of Damage of Bayley with Damage Control. Doing being able to do singles tags, six woman tags on TV every week. It's a proven formula. Team warfare is a proven formula. For weekly TV dating back to the 80s, basically,
Oh.
and the Horsemen in the 80s, basically. So you were able to do that. Two, once again, two very, very, very good, if not great, matches with Bayley. The ladder match and the last standing match. Then going into War Games and just and now this just this new feud heading into this new feud with Alexa Bliss, which could be a really. Because Alexa Bliss is the only other, maybe Asuka a little bit, but I don't think they ever really stuck the landing with Asuka. Alexa Bliss is the only other person who's really been allowed to breathe that air, other than Bianca
Oh,
previously.
yeah, Alexa Bliss, it feels like she was in that air so long ago, I forget that she was in that air.
No, it's incredible. It's been 4 years since the last over 4 years since the last time she was a singles champion. It's really amazing. That feels like especially since we had the COVID year in between. It feels like it was 5, 10 years ago. It feels so long ago. But yes, no. Alexa Bliss between about 2016 and 2018 was consistently in the title in the Raw or SmackDown title picture. As much, if not more, than any member of the Horsemen, she really was.
Yeah.
Asuka had her moment, but Asuka's moment will have that. Asuka's gonna be like Drew McIntyre. Her moment was during the COVID, was during the empty arena era. It will always have that asterisk by it when she was really pushed hard for months and months and months for like when she had her like year on top.
Oh, and she still wasn't pushed that consistently even when she was on top. She definitely did not have the strongest set of title defenses, in my opinion. And yeah, it's Alexa isn't gonna get like I would be kind of surprised if she's the one that dethrones Bianca Belair. Would not be completely unheard of this time of the year.
I wouldn't be completely surprised, but there's also got to be, you know, more shoes to drop though too. She can't just lose this match and move on. There's got to be other things in play here. Obviously, Rhea Ripley is being set up for an eventual challenge. The specter of Charlotte Flair still looms. You know, she can walk in at any time and take one of those main event women's spots.
I was interested this morning, and I did have her down one Charlotte Flair in my notes. I believe her last appearance was in May of this year.
Yes, it was in May. She has not appeared since she lost to Ronda. And in that time, Ronda has lost the championship, turned heel, and won the title back. At the time that Charlotte has been gone. And also in the time that Charlotte left and went to get married, her husband returned to TV, to AEW TV, got in a fist fight, got banned from TV while still under contract. And all of this has happened while she has not made one appearance on TV in over 6 months.
She gets a lot of Instagram likes. I'm not sure about Instagram.
She does get a lot of Instagram likes, yes. She seems to have an endless supply of photos of her, of both her wedding and photos of herself in Mexico with Andrade. Like, where have these photos been? It's pretty funny to me. It's just funny to me, but yeah, it's been her last 2 years has been a fascinating story. That I once again, it's like the disappearances of Alexa Bliss. It's like there's got to be a story here. I don't know if anyone will ever tell the truth about it, but there has to be a story.
Their wrestling's ability to tell the truth is still it's maybe a little more transparent than it used to be. There's still definitely some clear cases of mouth shuttery going on.
Something I was able to watch last night is the new Peacock documentary on the life of Ric Flair. You saw the 30th for 30. I think that one is superior. This one is well done. It doesn't, of course, it does not get into any controversy or anything of that nature. So it's like, maybe roll the eyes a little bit. But in the part where they talked about the death of Reed Flair, Charlotte, reiterated the point that she's made many times that this was never her dream.
Oh,
she kind of got pulled in it by him before he died, and then after he died, she did all this in tribute to him, and she really did grow to love it and enjoy it, and was very 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 good at it for a time, but after a while, she accomplished everything she wanted to accomplish, and now it's back to thinking, This was never really the thing I wanted to do with my life. And it's just like, now what? She's not one of those people who's going to want to win the title. Even though she's already on her way to winning the title about 16, 17 times. It's like, does that even matter to her anymore? Understandably. And it's again, it's something that really struck me. now talking about her, thinking about once again, she reiterates that point over and over again that this was never her dream. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
But at this point in her life, it's like, what else do you do?
Yeah. Well, and it's not like she has. She, you know, some people have taken this break. You're like, oh, well, they. You end up finally hearing that they got an acting gig, or you know, this, that, or the other opportunity popped up. I don't feel like that opportunity has been there for Charlotte yet, and you know, when you're running on seven months. It feels like something should have leaked if you were, you know, trying to become a movie star.
Yeah, it's a very strange. It's been a strange couple of years. You know, she's been off more than she's been on for about 2 years now, and it's a very interesting situation. And you know, time has marched on without her. Especially this last disappearance, you know. Well, SmackDown could maybe use some juice, but it doesn't need Charlotte versus Ronda again, definitely. And you know, we've been building Rhea Ripley up really, really strong. And Bianca versus Rhea would absolutely be a very strong WrestleMania women's title match. And you either. You know, if you're thinking Charlotte, it's got to be about Charlotte. You either delay Rhea or you rush through Rhea. You know, between Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber. And either way, I think we'd be a disservice to Rhea. I think she's earned the WrestleMania title match. Now, granted. You know, there could be twists and turns here. You know, the Alexa Bliss thing now has been, you know, could throw a monkey wrench at things. You know, maybe we don't want things to be super, super predictable. So it's interesting, but you know, these things are all in play. I mean, we've had no sign or mention of Charlotte Flair other than one thing, and that is that she was on the original Royal Rumble poster. Now, I don't know if they've edited a new Royal Rumble poster and she's not on it, because she's never coming back, but I don't think she's never coming back.
It's another one of those, and it's not one that I wrote down, but I guess we're there as far as time marching on goes. Sasha Banks and Naomi still nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I mean, rumors swirling that one Sasha, or maybe we should finally start continue to saying Mercedes is going to be in Japan for New Japan, as New Japan has for the first time in its history, along with its partnership/ownership with what's the woman's, where was she called? I feel so bad for not remembering this off the top of my head.
It's not. I'm not going to go easy with Stardom, which I feel like is the
Stardom. It is Stardom.
Okay.
Yes, it is Stardom. Yes, it's Stardom. I feel horrible about that. Once again, I've been my Japanese wrestling watching has been nil for over 2 years now. It really has been, which is unfortunate, but it is not surprising. But yes, Stardom. Where former Kairi Sane, now just Kairi, is their reigning women's champion. They do occasionally get women's title matches to be featured on main New Japan cards, which is something that has never happened before. But the Stardom is also mostly its own thing. Rumors swirling that Mercedes will appear on January 4th at the Tokyo Dome and will wrestle at least part time for Stardom/New Japan in big matches. You know, I'm sure she'll get paid good money for that, and it's something she's always wanted to do. She's always wanted to wrestle in Japan. She's always wanted to wrestle in Mexico. So again, if these are the things that she wants to do with her life, and she can do them free of the WWE control, have at it. We've also got a mystery partner situation upcoming in AEW as well with the women, which They are going to need to make an announcement about that. If it's her, you maybe want to give it at least a week's notice. Maybe, or you can save that for a surprise. But if it's not her, they need to announce Soraya's part in the next 2 weeks. Because the match is on the 11th, I believe.
Okay.
Oh, because they are setting themselves up for a giant, fart church. if they keep it a mystery, if they keep it a mystery to the last minute, and it's not her.
Yeah. Cause I guess as much as I like Naomi, she doesn't really hold that same cachet, am I correct?
No, I mean, she might be the closest thing that they could do. But once again, you keep that thing to a mystery to the very last second, and it's not her. I think that's no matter who it is, I think it's a giant mistake.
Yeah.
There's a gap. I love Naomi to death, but there is a gap of star power there. And, Naomi's going to have to figure herself out, too. I made a remark a couple months ago about her seemingly being, Sasha/Mercedes plus one at all these type of events that she was going to. And I'm sure she had a good time. I'm sure it was fun living that life. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, whether it's in wrestling or not, most people are going to want Mercedes instead of her. I hate saying it like that.
No. Yeah, it kind of is what it is. In a lot of ways, you're right. Like, she doesn't seem like she's not the main attraction.
No, it doesn't. People write up their news stories about this whole thing without ever mentioning her. Because the attention was all on Sasha, and that sucked, and it was not, and that wasn't entirely fair. But the attention is going to be on Sasha/Mercedes. And, this whole thing of the two of them being a package deal wasn't likely going to last forever. We'll see what Mercedes does here. Once again, the rumors are out there that of the things that she wants to do and other things that she may have brewing.
Yeah, I mean, if it's indeed January 4th, we will not know by the time we record next week.
We will. No, we will not know. No, we won't know. You and Jeremy will know. You guys will be able to talk about it. I don't know if any of us is getting up at 4 a.m. to watch Wrestle Kingdom. I'm pretty much skipping it at this point. I haven't had a New Japan World subscription in nearly a couple of years, probably a couple of years now, because that's how much my
interest is. Yeah, my subscription lapsed a little while ago. I'm not completely sure when. It might have been this calendar year when I realized that I hadn't watched it at all for almost a year. And I don't know if I'm not, definitely not waking up at 4 a.m. for that, because I can't even get out of bed at 4 a.m. for my job. I still don't feel like that's a strong enough pull for me to go ahead and pop for.
No, it's not.
Omega wrestling Ospreay isn't enough of a pull for me either, honestly.
Once again, not even my favorite style of match. So, two guys who maybe kind of bring out the bad habits in each other. And once again, as we said, it's, getting back to Sasha and Naomi. Yeah. Let's talk more about the Naomi thing. She does have a ready-made spot for her if they want to make her the Lady of the Bloodline. And you know, I think that might be the best option for the SmackDown Women's Division. You know, after especially if Ronda's not sticking around after WrestleMania and they need a top heel, that might be a direction to go.
Yeah, it's kind of in a lot of ways. It's kind of interesting that it hasn't happened. I don't know if it is because Ronda has turned heel, and it would be a little bit of an odd heel versus heel matchup in that situation.
If she Naomi really is just done. Maybe she is just done with wrestling. You know, and she's not. You know, she's okay with not being a celebrity anymore. Maybe she just wants to have a normal life. You know. Who knows?
I do not know what is in these people's skulls. Right. So we will we will see what happens.
We are heading up on the season where things happen. We are heading on the new year.
Y'all,
Rumble season, WrestleMania season, and everything else in between. It's 2022 was in many ways the most interesting year in wrestling for over 20 years. Not necessarily for anything that happened in the ring, but it was also an interesting year in the ring and on screen as well.
Well, that sounds like a good wrap-up. So I don't feel like I need to add anything else other than talking about Belltime beer. My father-in-law got some specialty beers for us for this Christmas celebration, and this one was Brewdog, which they are originally from Scotland, but their main brewery in the United States is just southeast of Columbus here, and they team with National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation for It's a Beaut pecan and toffee stout. I have now had a couple of these, and I was finished with this thing by the time we were done with the AEW portion of the podcast. So Brewdog has a much wider distributorship than most of the Columbus beers, since they are, in fact, an international brand at this juncture. So if you happen to be in your craft brewery location of choice, take a look for the Brewdog It's a Beaut. It is a very tasty stout if you are into the dark beers. So that is the Belltime beer suggestion from @DeFrango11. The other useful information came from @StuntCali. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.
Happy New Year later.